Welcome to Divine Intimacy Radio, a co-production of EWTN Radio and SpiritualDirection.com, where we provide you with a spiritual haven of rest and explore the riches of the wisdom of the saints and the path to union with God.
This is Dan and Stephanie Burke. Welcome to Divine Intimacy Radio, your radio haven of rest.
Your hermitage of the heart.
Your monastery of the mind, where we lift our hearts and minds to heaven to draw upon the wisdom of the saints to help us to navigate the tumult of this life. And this show is dead center to the last phrase of our introduction, to help us to navigate the tumult of this difficult life. And the tumult right now is Pope Leo's recent interview with Crux, where he said some things that were vague and have triggered my traditionalist friends quite extensively, although I think many are handling it well, many are not. And our guest today is Dr. Gavin Ashenden, and he provided a beautiful commentary on this that I want to agree with and I want to believe is true. So we're gonna talk a bit through that and see if I can be further grounded in what I think is a beautiful, appropriate, charitable assumption. Dr. Ashenden is best known for his role as a former Anglican bishop, chaplain to Queen Elizabeth, right, Dr. Ashenden? Yep. He's taught, you know, at the PhD level for years, been a bishop, a priest in the Anglican Church, converted in 2019. I have an affinity to him without knowing him, although we've talked before, because I was an Anglican seminarian at one point, or an Orthodox Episcopalian seminarian at one point, and I even look back on those days with some affection toward the poetic expression of what we would call the Liturgy of the Hours, but the Book of Common Prayer. Do you miss the Book of Common Prayer at all?
I do. In fact, I very nearly... I was going to be ordained as a Catholic priest when I, this is partly God's way of luring me to the point of conversion, which I might have found too sacrificial to make otherwise. But it began to become more complex and went wrong a little bit. But there was a point where I thought I wanted to join the Ordinariate because I missed the 16th century liturgy of the English so much. It really is beautiful. It's theologically beautiful, not as theologically astute as it should be, but poetically and linguistically, it's just lovely. And the trouble is, a lot of people think that we've progressed in everything, but linguistically and sometimes spiritually, we regress sometimes. And much of the liturgy we've done over the last 50 years is not really, it doesn't stick in your heart much.
One of the things I love about you is you always understate things, and I think for our American listeners, all you have to do is amplify what he says times 100.
By 10, yes, that's right.
And you'll get to what he's really saying. But
there's an English trait. I'm very sorry.
Okay. Well,
this doesn't apply to us, Dan, at all. But if I suddenly become icily polite, it means I'm nuclearly furious and being very rude indeed.
No, I understand that about the British. So, you know, I concur with you. I mean, one of the last liturgies I attended as a seminarian was basically what I thought Benedict was going to do, which was it would have been a merger of the ordinary form with a higher expression of the ordinary form, more in continuity with the Latin Mass, mm-hmm. because it was a 2-hour Mass. We always had the gospel before and after. It was ad orientem, sung, chanted, a great deal of Latin. It was exquisite. And it was Catholic. And what I needed, it was what I needed to move from my evangelical roots. I'm Jewish, but I came to believe in Jesus in a Southern Baptist church. And so I had this I'm a very hyper-independent person. So I had this, all of those sort of elements of my DNA make it very hard to use the vocal prayer, frankly, or to do worship or liturgy in some way that other person tells me to do, because of course the false argument, it's not from the heart, and we know that that's not true. But I was shocked, frankly, when I became Catholic, because I studied my way into the church. I was shocked at the how banal the liturgy.
Oh,
of course.
Oh, just awful. I mean, like you, we have a lot in common. I'm 50% Jewish. My father was it turns out was Jewish, so he didn't know it for much of his life. But and I think you're right. There is a DNA thing that happens to you. But it is extraordinary. In fact, it makes it very hard to become Catholic for a high church Episcopalian, because one of the things that the Anglicans and Episcopalians were good at, they were good at poetry, good at music, good at hymns, good at verbal beauty. They're blessed in that. They the huge hole in the middle that could not be made up for, missing either Our Lady or the Mass. But there's a lot you have to let go, and then you think you're coming into the richness of the Mother Church, only to discover that she's had a kind of form of cultural amnesia.
Well, and that's why so many I think take refuge in the Latin Mass. Before we do our one final comment on the liturgy, and then we need to move into our topic today about criticizing the Pope. But I was delighted, of course. I wept, actually, when the Anglican Ordinariate was established, because I, like you, have so many friends who were, you know, Anglican priests and or in seminary. And one dear friend who actually we name our digital prayer chapel after is Father Rick Hartley, was an Anglican who wanted to become a part of our community of Apostoli Vie because he loved it so much. Mm-hmm. He was taking courses at the Abel Institute. And I said, you have to become Catholic. And so he said, but that denies my ordination. And I said, it's actually the opposite. The ordinariate affirms it, but just notes that there are things that have to be remedied or corrected in the ordination. So we had a meeting set up for him to come to meet with me and one of the members of the board of the ordinariate. And he died at 40 years old in a chair in his living room, leaving, of course, behind a family. The grace of it is, you know, it's the Father Rick Hartley Digital Chapel. And I believe he died as in the hands of God, maybe in purgatory, but certainly as now a Catholic priest, because that was the desire of his heart. So the last thing I'll say about liturgy is, and I know this, I think I've already said that once, but when the ordinariate was established and the liturgy was approved, the prayer of humble access, which
beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
I pray it every Mass after, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only I pray that the prayer of humble access is just exquisite. And now it's Catholic. So we can pray that in the Mass anyway.
And that's the beauty of the ordinariate. It's taken some of the most exquisite and lovely aspects of sacramental theology, tidied them up theologically, and then held them in the embrace of the real faith. And it's a great combination.
So let's move now and make a shift into Stephanie and I listened to your reflections and also your subsequent conversation with Dr. Larry Chapp, who I have a great appreciation for, about your reaction to the Crux interview. And I will just say, I mean, I used to be the president of the largest Catholic news organization in the world. The reason the poor quality, people commenting on that, is I think what happened is he agreed to it at the last minute, and they had no option but to go, the Pope's coming, how do we record this, you know? So I'm sure that's what happened. But in the conversation, he said things that have a subset of the traditionalist movement really their hair is on fire. Could you address a few of those things and talk about why you've adopted a different, your hair is not on fire, you have hope, but I want to dig into that, but on the spiritual side as much as we can, because I think there's something about you and your interior life that has a different lens on this than some others.
Well, I think it might have, because I certainly see things differently. I think the first thing we have to do is to try and establish a context, because and the first thing I'd say is most of us are suffering from post-Francis post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right.
I know I am. So, I mean, it wasn't easy to convert under Blessed Pope Francis. It was very difficult. And it got worse and worse as the shocks came. Let's just stick with ambiguity. But it was particularly bad for me, in fact, because the strategy that Pope Francis appeared to be pursuing was identical to the one in which had taken Episcopalianism from a kind of semi-Christian orthodoxy into complete heterodoxy. And it was just the same political and philosophical root. And so many of us wanted to shout out and say, synodality, don't touch it. It's a trick. The state of alarm that we all got to at the Pope's death is very heightened. And I really understand why people are very anxious. To tell you the truth, when I was watching the election for Pope Leo, I was with a couple of colleagues in particular who were very relaxed about it. They were laughing and they were joking. And I was rigid with fright because I thought, Lord, I don't know how I'll cope with the Francis II. I really just don't know how I'll cope. This has taken me to my limits already. And so I was very, very keen to scrutinize Pope Leo when he came. My salvation didn't depend upon it, but my sanity might have done. And as time went by, some small good signs appeared. One can't make too much of them, but they were good. In fact, there was nothing bad. There was only good. I was still very hesitant, and I've actually found the summer a difficult time, knowing that the autumn was going to be when the cookie crumbled or things began to change. And so I was on high alert for the Crookes interview. A lot of people have said, you're being too charitable, you're being too optimistic, you're being too relaxed. The opposite is the case. I was absolutely forensically poised. and now this is the difference, I think. If you like American cowboy movies, then there's a point where you hear a bugle and the cavalry come and you jump up and down and say, we're safe. There is no ambiguity. Here are the good guys. Those are the bad guys. And the battle is going to be won. And I think that after what we've been through with Pope Francis, everyone was just longing for that moment to hear the bugle being sounded. You know, we wanted the Pope to come onto the loggia or something similar and say, "Fiducia supplicans, I rip it in two. Here it's gone. Relax, folks. All is well." And I've no idea whether he would or wouldn't have done it, but I don't think the Pope could do it, because his biggest problem was going to be how you renew the integrity of the See of Peter without rubbishing your predecessor. Mm-hmm. You can't afford to rubbish you just can't. I mean, it's not theologically, spiritually, sociologically, philosophically sensible. Maybe it shouldn't even be possible. So here's Pope Leo's dilemma. He's got to deal with the mess that Pope Francis left him without being rude about Pope Francis, or without just saying, I'm getting rid of it. So then what's he going to do? Well, I thought what he did was brilliant and quite English, actually, in the sense it was full of understatement and a degree of subtlety. And I think it's the subtlety that's passed people by. They said, well, we don't need subtlety now. We need reassurance.
Gavin, could we pause in that moment?
Sure.
We've got to go to break, but yes. Let's come back on, we don't need subtlety, we need reassurance. And friends, we're talking with Dr. Gavin Ashenden, but you can find out more about him at he has a Substack, The New English Catholic, and our producer will flash that on the screen for those who are watching, drgavinashenden.substack.com. We'll be right back. Friends, if you have looked at the saints and thought, you know, how, I remember one guy saying to me, you're always talking about the saints. I'm a total mess. It doesn't help me. You know, and I think, well, have you ever read the Confessions, which, you know, talks about how many saints begin, you know? So a lot of times we get frustrated and we don't understand the path of the saints and how it is they became saints. And that can bring a great deal of hope. So there's a new course at the Avila Institute called 12 Steps to the Sacred, Becoming the Saint God Made You to Be, taught by Gabriel Garnica, a new teacher at the Avila Institute and a graduate of the Avila Institute. It's going to begin Wednesday at 7:30 Eastern time. October 29th is the date you need to apply by. So if you want to be a saint, check out avila-institute.org. Welcome back to Divine Intimacy Radio, your radio haven of rest. We are with Dr. Gavin Ashenden talking about the Pope, criticizing the Pope, how we should think about all of this. And one of the things I love about what you said which is a fair assessment of those whose hair is on fire after the Crux interview, is just, and I'm going to say this more viscerally, the traditional, the faithful Catholics, I'm going to say it this way, faithful Catholics have had the snot beat out of them for Absolutely. Years,
yeah.
criticized, rejected,
yeah.
and all they want is the deposit of the faith. All they want is peace in the liturgy. All they want is, there's so many good things that they want. And what, and I mean, it's just honest to say, the Pope said, I don't care about you. You are not among the welcome. You are not welcome here. Everyone is welcome, subtext, but not you.
Yes.
And so they're raw. And then so you have this crux yes. interview where, you know, the Pope is using what Benedict would have called a studied ambiguity. The question is it for good or ill?
Let me give you the example of a judo match. In a judo match, imagine you have a bully who needs pulling down. And you might say to yourself, well, let's get a bigger person to fight him, to basically to beat the CRAP out of him. We'd like to see that. That would be a way of dealing with the bully. But actually, there is a way in judo of you could have a more gentle man who would use the bully's weight against him. And what I saw Leo doing was using the weight of Francis against him. Everything depends, if you're an academic or you're trained in to think a little bit, in how you define your terms. And so let's take synodality. I thought what was charming, in fact, I liked it so much, I just laughed and hugged myself. I thought, this is so clever and so sweet and so pure, actually. Because so he's presented with the Latin Mass and he's asked, well, what are you going to do about it? And he said, well, I think we might solve this with synodality. And after about 2 seconds thought, I went, oh, I love this. This is so funny. Because you see, synodality can either be a verb, a noun, or an adverb. And with Pope Francis, it was a noun. It was a thing he made, and he made the synodal process. And it was designed to destroy the Catholic faith. It was full of liberals and progressives. They were handpicked to do this, and the agenda was handpicked. And the whole thing was just going to be a nasty, nasty way of blowing up the magisterium. And then blessed be God forever, he died. And so synodality is not a bad thing in itself. It just means the process by which Christians come together to talk, pray, and discern. It doesn't have to be the Francis synodal process. That was just an aberrational form of it. So when Pope Leo says, I wonder if we shouldn't use synodality, what he really means is, let's have people talk to each other. I mean, that's how he said it. This is going to be complex, he said. Bear with me. I'm the Pope. I've got to get rid of this thing without being rude to Francis. So just bear with me. We're going to have to talk about this and find our way through it. I wonder what would happen if we do it synodally. So I can tell you what will happen if we do it synodally. People will sit down and talk and they'll say, first of all the information that went into the abolition of Latin Mass was fake. It wasn't true. It wasn't true that bishops were saying this is divisive. Nor was it true to say that the traditionalists were politically extreme and pretentious or philosophically or liturgically toxically towards the Novus Ordo. They just loved the Latin Mass and they wanted to say his prayers. And just so you know, the Pope understood that. He described two kinds of issues related to the conversation. He said there are two groups. One group is in pursuit of mysticism and prayer and saying their prayers and worshipping. And the other group is interested in politics. Now, I just ask our listeners for a moment to imagine who those two groups are, because it's the TLM people who are interested in the mystery and they're saying their prayers. They say it all the time. They say, that's why we're here. And it's the anti-TLM people who say, this is a political issue. Pope Leo made it crystal clear he was on the side of those who wanted to use it in pursuit of mysticism and prayer. Any conversation about this, that's exactly what this will emerge. So imagine you bring an aspect of the church together in whatever form, whether it's done informally as we're doing it or formally in Rome, and a conversation takes place. The truth will come to the surface. And the truth is, this is the prayer of the church. It works. It's beautiful. It's much loved. It's entirely consistent with anything that's come afterwards. There is no antipathy between Novus Ordo and the Latin Mass. That's not to say that one might not prefer one to the other, or one might do a different job to the other. That's a different conversation. But there cannot be any antipathy as a Catholic between these two developments of our faith. That's what a conversation will show. I just loved the fact he was taking one of Francis's strongest preferences and he was redefining it to be a tool of redemption within the church to solve this thing. It's so neat and beautiful. It is perfect because instead of attacking Pope Francis, which would reduce the status and the honor of the papacy, he honors Pope Francis by saying, well, let's use one of Francis's favorite ideas and we'll just rejig it a little bit and to make it work better. And bingo, we have harmony, we have understanding, we have the TLM, we have the Mass of the Ages. How do you like that, folks? It's brilliant. It's lovely.
Yeah, it is. It's very lovely. So let me ask you a question, because two different people, very, you know, people that would say I'm completely Catholic, read that sentence.
Yeah.
And one goes very negative and you went very positive. And I don't think that's just an intellectual exercise. I would ask of you, what is it about your particular disposition of heart that can get past, that moves from the head to the heart, that has a positive disposition towards what Pope Leo said versus immediately going to maybe a critical spirit that would lead us to misinterpret everything that he says?
Well, at the risk of being pretentious, and I hope you'll forgive me if I'm pretentious, I'll say it's my reading of St. Augustine. So you see, one of the things about St. Augustine is the reason he's so magnificent is that he manages the head and the heart in a particular way. Let me just go back one step and say that one of the aphorisms that mainly comes from Orthodoxy, which I love, but it's entirely integrated in the Catholic spirit, is a phrase that says the aim of the human being who loves God is to stand before the real God with the real self, with the mind in the heart. This is just the most magnificent agenda, because you have to start saying to yourself, well, who is the real God? And then we know this is a Trinitarian task. And who is the real my real self? And that's a very interesting journey to go down. And that involves choosing certain preferential means of analysis. But the killer for our sake is this, with the mind and the heart, because we are rational children of the Enlightenment by nature. For much of my life, I preferenced the mind. I earned my living by the mind. I was an academic. I wasn't a particularly good one, but I was one. And that was my culture. And one of the things I had to learn was that the deep at the root of Christian spirituality and mysticism, the basic place, the home place, the building, it's the heart. Now, we know this from scriptures. And what's the relationship between the mind and the heart? Well, it's like prayer, really. You have to shut the mind up. You have to say to the mind, close down now. You can't do any more for me. I mean, you might like words and you might like ideas, but if I'm going to be in the presence of God, you're just going to have to be quiet and let the heart take over. And so one of the things that you do in prayer is you find, and this is part of the reason for the Jesus prayer and for the rosary, is you have to still the mind and let it be quiet and let the heart do its job. Now, in terms of theology or discernment, I think the task is always to get the relationship between the mind and the heart right. Now, most people, when they are listening to Leo, they're doing it with the mind. The mind's on full alert. Is he going to say the things I need him to say to take my fear away? That's how people have come to this. And he didn't. And that's why they're still freaked out. I understand that completely. But if you approach Leo with the heart and you say, what's his heart doing? How is it going to help my heart? Mm-hmm. What you see is a quiet man who clearly prays, who has a degree of wisdom about him, the way he's carried himself. He's gone gently, he's gone quietly, he's gone subtly, he's gone with respect. You can see he's waiting and praying, and he's taken an agonizing 3 or 4 months. And we all wanted him to say, here I am on the loggia. It's okay, folks. But he's got a very profound task to accomplish as the Pope. He's not a caped crusader for Catholicism. He's the Pope. He's the Father. He has to find a way of bringing the whole church. And let me just say why I think it's complicated. One of the things I've discovered is that the great many of the 1.4 billion Catholics in the world are not very well catechized. They are therefore very vulnerable to the spirit of the age. And many of them have been really badly bamboozled by wokery, by progressive ideas, by the whole kind of political toxicity that's fed through the media. the Pope's got to bring them with him somehow. Mm-hmm. He really can't afford, I don't think, to declare for one team against the other, because this is not a one team against the other thing. This is a Catholic thing. This is, how does our Father in God bring all the sheep together when some of the sheep are so completely freaked out and the others have been seduced into going in the wrong direction? And I think that, so my heart said, I see him waiting and praying and going slowly. People have said there's no room for subtlety. I think that's exactly, subtlety is exactly what you want, because you mustn't frighten the progressive sheep. You've got to get people who've been seduced by Jimmy Martin and say to them, you know, that's not the right way. This is the right way. We're not going to criticize you for having been taken in by that, but come with us this way. And that's what I feel intuitively and in my heart that Pope Leo is doing and can do. Now, why might that be? Well, first of all, because he's been in charge of the Augustinians. Now, they're not quite Jesuits, but they're still pretty sophisticated people. Anyone who spent their life reading St. Augustine is going to have a fairly well-developed sense of the head and the heart, theological orthodoxy, all the things that really matter in Christian spirituality. These guys are going to be well-formed, and he was looking after them. It is inconceivable that someone with a rock-solid reputation for looking after the worldwide Augustinian order is going to come to this with anything but a profound rootedness in Augustine. And you see, I remember too when he said, when he was elected, he said, I'm an Augustinian, I'm a son of St. Augustine. I've been formed by his theology, by his spirituality. That means he's trustworthy. And so I'm going to start off by saying, okay, I trust you.
So friends, you've been listening to Divine Intimacy Radio, Dr. Gavin Ashenden. You can find his work at the New English Catholic, drgavinashenden.substack.com.
Until next time, may the God of peace make you perfect in holiness. May he preserve you whole and entire, spirit, soul, and body, irreproachable at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. Amen.
Learn more about the interior life. Visit spiritualdirection.com. Divine Intimacy Radio is a co-production of EWTN Radio and spiritualdirection.com, and heard worldwide on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.